interview with Dale, D-A-L-E, Enoch, E-N-O-C-H, director of the Arkansas Institute of Politics, Conway, Arkansas, June 10th, 1974.
What is the status of the Democratic Party in Arkansas?
It's dying as fast as the Republican Party. The thing is, the only time we've ever come anywhere close to having a Democratic Party in this state was during the late 60s with Rockefeller, because they finally started getting nervous. The old chairman under Orville Faubus was Leon Catlett, who's old attorney in Little Rock, wheeler-dealer type guy. You can just look at him, and he just kind of looked old guard. Was chairman for years and years and years. When he finally gave it up, they finally started getting concerned in the late 60s. And a young attorney in Little Rock, Charlie Matthews, was appointed, who really tried to build a party for the first time, try to make it into something. He stayed in for a couple of years, and they were making some progress. Then Joe Purcell came in 70. Joe Purcell had been Attorney General for 4 years. Honest Joe, who this year ran for Lieutenant Governor, was elected easily. He's the one that Doug Smith of the Arkansas Gazette, in a story on the Lieutenant Governor's race earlier this year, said that Joe Purcell is the only man that anybody knows who that people have gone to sleep shaking hands with him. He was honest, credible, not overly bright, but just a nice guy. Was chairman for a couple of years.
Is there state Democratic headquarters? Didn't know.
Of sorts.
In Little Rock?
Yeah. They had a big fight earlier this year over the executive director of the Democratic Party. The guy who founded one was named Craig Campbell, who's 24, 25 years old. It was a heck of a big fight. Craig had the backing of John McClellan and the tacit support of Bumpers. The theory at the time was that Bumpers was trying to win favor with McClellan and therefore didn't oppose Craig Campbell. The opposition to Campbell was based primarily on the fact that he voted for Richard Nixon in 1972. And the opposition, ironically, was led by Sheriff Marlon Hawkins of Conway County, who is old guard Democrat, who has suddenly become vocal statewide in the past year, billing himself as a reformed old pro. But that is about the only county in the state that one man can deliver however he wants to deliver it. I'm running an item in the newsletter this time. Marlon had give you an idea of Conway County, and it's about the only machine county left in this state. Faubus 4 years ago got 76.6% of the votes in the governor's race. This year he got 23% in Conway County. This year he got 23%. But Marlin had supported both Faubus and Pryor. This time he opted for Pryor and refused to vote to support Faubus for the first time in his career and just wiped him out in Conway County. But he had an ad. See you tomorrow. He had an ad in the Petitgene Country headline, which starts at the bottom of that page, which is absolutely hilarious because he tells why he's supporting Pryor over Faubus and winds up, it was in the form of an open letter on his stationery, Sheriff Marlon Hawkins listing all his deputies and collectors and everything. And winding up by saying, give me a vote of confidence for supporting Pryor. And they did. It wiped Faubus out, and he'd been carrying that county for years, just huge margins. But Hawkins led the fight against Craig Campbell. Craig finally won it by about 2 votes. But he took over the job, and it was one of these situations, you know, your first job is to go raise your own salary. You can make as much money as you can raise, virtually. They don't have any money. They don't have anything.
But this is the only county organization?
It's the only one that can really still deliver. I mean,
what are there county organizations as such?
Democratic organizations? Yeah, technically.
Paper organizations.
But, yeah.
None of them staffed?
Oh, no. One in Pulaski County, which is Little Rock. They have they're probably maybe in better shape than the state office. Howard Deemer is the executive director of the Democratic Party. Pulaski County, that's the only other one. But the thing is, the Democratic Party in this state has no money, has no real organization, has no policy, has nothing. You win the Democratic nomination in this state, and all you've got is a label. Nobody turns to the Democratic Party for anything. You know, you get the nomination, you go to the Democratic Party and ask for a mailing list, for a list of party workers or anything. And about all you'll get is a list of the county committees. Nobody turns to it for anything.
Does the state finance the primaries?
Party.
The party does?
The local committees in each county.
So the party actually runs the Democratic primary? Through filing fees?
Filing fees.
How much are the filing fees?
God awful.
Dale did a special piece on that.
Yeah, I've got a whole newsletter on that, which you can get a copy of.
Does all the money stay at the local level from the fees? None of them goes to the state level?
The congressional and state officials pay a state filing fee, and that goes to the state committee.
So they do have some revenue.
And that's about the sum of it. To give you an idea, the thing is, early this year, Craig Campbell won that job in, I think it was December, either December or January. And within a month, I think their bank account was $29. And the only way they managed to even stay open, Campbell went back to his home county in Phillips County and raised $5,000 or something, so they managed to keep going for a little while. It's just been hand-to-mouth all along until they started getting some filing fees.
Do they have party memberships?
No.
Looking back, Dale, to 1948, what are the major events and, you know, developments, political developments in Arkansas?
Of course, 48 was when McMath came in. In contrast to the image of Arkansas, which is based almost totally on 1957, Little Rock Crisis, Arkansas has probably one of the best records of electing generally moderates of the past 25 years of any state in the South. The congressional delegation has been generally moderate. Sid McMath came in as a reformer, was in for 2 terms, tried to stay in for a 3rd term because he wanted to run against McClellan. But he came in as a reformer, really didn't deliver, was defeated for a 3rd term by Francis Cherry, who was the moderate in the race. Cherry had good intentions, but...
All right, he was a moderate, you say, compared with McMath. How was McMath perceived at that point? At the end of his 2nd term.
He was a World War II GI reformer who was elected prosecuting attorney in Garland County, which is Hot Springs, on a clean-up Hot Springs ticket. has generally been labeled, ran as a reformer, and generally was considered to be a reformer. Apparently his problem was that he just couldn't deliver that much and wound up with scandals and the highway administration. But going to, McMath generally was considered moderate, certainly on the racial issue has generally been moderate, and a reformer, good government type candidate. Cherry was generally moderate. Orville Faubus was the moderate in the race in 1954. And his image really didn't change till 1957. You'll run into a lot of debates and a lot of disagreement. The accepted wisdom is that 1957 was purely political. He was determined to win a third term and to do whatever was necessary to win it. There is disagreement on that. Incidentally,
what is the disagreement?
That thing is, Faubus says that he had information that there was going to be major trouble. He bases it on a telephone call that he says he received.
Never substantiated.
It was never substantiated. Of course, his argument is that it didn't occur because he took preventive steps. I don't know how that'll ever be resolved. I don't know. It's a matter of perception of Orville Faubus. As I say, the accepted wisdom, at least among liberals, anti-Faubus people, is that it was purely political and nothing else.
How about Pierce's version? Rockefeller going in to see him and trying to talk him out of it, and Faubus saying,
I'd never heard that until I read it, Pierce's. Presume it's true. I'd never heard Faubus make any mention of it or any reference to it anywhere. I assume he got that from W.R. I think we have a copy of a paper in here, which is done by a political scientist at the University of Fayetteville on Faubus and that 57 decision. Which I think takes the other point of view, which might be helpful to you. And I'll double check who wrote that. I got a copy of it about a year ago. It's in the back of my mind that the guy who wrote that is a black political scientist at the university. But I'll pull that out. Okay. But at any rate, Orville came in as the moderate in that race. Certainly since then, we've had 4 years of Rockefeller, 4 years Bumpers, now Pryor, who clearly was a moderate in this race, the congressional delegation. Of course, McClellan has had, what his image is. But Fulbright, Mills, who has not been a liberal, but he has not been a Southern conservative, strict definition of that word either. The only one that really was the most conservative members of the Arkansas congressional delegation were McClellan and E.C. Took Gathings, who was the congressman from northeast Arkansas for 30 years before he retired in 68. And he was replaced by Alexander, who is certainly more moderate than Gathings was. Trimble over in northwest Arkansas was more than moderate, actually moderate to liberal. Orrin Harris in South Arkansas, he was pretty generally moderate. The one change that took place in the congressional delegation was when Brooks Hayes got beaten following the 57 crisis by Dale Alford, who was the right-wing segregationist.
Is that perceived generally here as a direct result of Faubus's intervention?
Well, Hayes tried to play the peacekeeper role, and it was pretty direct because Alford ran as a write-in and beat Hayes. But then he got, Alford served two terms, I think, 58-62, and in 62, he was redistricted out, tried to run for governor, and finished poorly. Personally, I think Orville Faubus is going to come out better in history than a lot of people think he is. With the exception of 1957, he generally managed to stay in for 12 years without any major scandals in his administration, with the exception of the standing charge that he was profiteering from the job, which apparently is quite true.
How about the allegation that the effect of his Little Rock stand hurt the state economically and cut down industrial development?
Fish's
book is sort of ambivalent on that point. Have you seen any hard
studies? I'm not really sure who would be able to.
Well, Pierce suggests that because Winthrop Rockefeller was heading the Industrial Development Commission at that time, or following that time, that took the edge off it.
Well, no, that up to that point, things were progressing, and then when Rockefeller, didn't Rockefeller step aside at that point?
No, he didn't step aside until
64. 60, 62 or 63, wasn't it? I think it's when he decided to run, which was a year or two before he actually, it seems like it was 63.
Why do you think he'll do so well historically?
Faubus?
Yeah.
Because with the exception of 1957, it generally was a progressive period. The thing is that Faubus did pass fairly significant tax increase programs. It was a building period. An awful lot of emphasis went into buildings, highways, state institutions. But there was a real need for it at that point. Generally, it was a fairly progressive period, with the exception of 57. And the general perception is that the state's image was hurt, industrial development was hurt. I've never seen anything to prove it, but it's generally perceived that was true. I don't know how you, in terms of looking at the development of the state, we'd been losing population consistently before 57. We continued to lose it after 57. That reversed sometime in the 60s. I don't know how you'd prove it with that data, but it's generally been perceived that it hurt the state. But within the state, there was a good bit of progress during that period.
More so than any of the other governors in that 25 years?
We haven't had many governors during that period.
It's hard to compare because you have one guy for 12. Most of them average 4.
McMath generally didn't deliver. Cherry was only in for 2 years. Was generally considered to be administratively ineffective. Nice guy with a good heart, but somebody who just wasn't very effective. Faubus was an extremely effective administrator. His general perception has been that he's probably one of the smartest politicians to come through this state in decades. Extremely effective with the legislature. If he really wanted something, he was the type. type guy who could get it through. Knew how to use political power, was not afraid to use it, and reached a point with the legislature where it was generally considered to be a rubber stamp legislature.
Why did he retire when he did?
I don't know. To some extent, Faubus will deny this. I'm sure Faubus will give standard replies, you know, that he'd been in long enough and was ready for arrest and that sort of thing. He would have had one heck of a hard time in the race. Rockefeller had been gearing up. Got 43% against Faubus the first time, which was only the second lowest percentage Faubus received since he first went into office. And ironically, that was 1964, which was his last race. That was the only time during that whole period that he got a smaller percentage in the general election than he did in the Democratic primary. He actually got something like 61% in the Democratic primary and fell to 57% against Rockefeller. Rockefeller learned from his mistakes in 64. He spent the whole 2 years running and gearing up for a 66 race against Orville Faubus. Then Orville quit. You know, the extent to which he was afraid that he might lose, I don't know.
So in those days, the Democratic Party really was a paper organization that ran a primary, right?
The only thing that they really do is they provide a label and they run the primary.
And that label in Arkansas still is very important, right?
Extremely. Extremely. So when you get...
Was Rockefeller's election a fluke?
I personally have strong doubts that he could have won against most other people except Jim Johnson. Is what put him in were Democrats for Rockefeller. To some extent, to a good extent, Democrats for Rockefeller were people who were very disenchanted with Orville Faubus. But there also were just an awful lot of Democrats who just simply couldn't take Jim Johnson. Jim Johnson was an arch segregationist who still, even in 1966, refused to shake hands with a black man.
So that automatically got Rockefeller the black vote, which he had a positive appeal for anyway.
But the thing is that, apparently it took more than just that, because in 1964, one of his biggest disappointments had been the fact that he thought just because he was Rockefeller and because the family had been contributing to Urban League for years and years and years, and because of his associations, the black vote would come trotting out to him, and it just didn't happen. Faubus still got a significant black vote. 64.
But I'd presume by 66, the black registration had increased substantially.
1964 was when a constitutional amendment was approved in Arkansas, setting up a permanent registration system, doing away with poll tax. The next 2 years, Rockefeller and the Republicans did a massive voter registration job among blacks in Arkansas. I can show you, I've got the data on voter registration increase during that period. It was just phenomenal. I doubt that we've ever really seen a sophisticated campaign like Rockefeller ran before or since in this state.
How was he as a governor?
I think the Rockefeller administration was good for the state. Rockefeller himself was so-so. You know, how do you break it down? He deserves credit for bringing some good people into state administration and supporting them. But as an administrator, he was a poor administrator. There's just no way around it. He had very little understanding of politics. the art of compromise was foreign to him. He just couldn't comprehend it. It was undemocratic, anti-American, and everything else. If you propose something good, then people ought to flock to it just because it's good. And that was his whole approach to the legislature. When they didn't work that way, he moved into an attack position and spent the last 2 years of his time criticizing the legislature, going on statewide television, paying for the time to criticize the legislature constantly. In spite of that, the legislature did get more of his program went through than a lot of people realized. He couldn't stand to stay in the office. I actually at one point did a story following him for a whole week, and I think he spent a total of about 10 hours in the office in the whole week. Supposedly he was constantly working at the farm or elsewhere. Nobody knows for sure what he was doing, but he'd have appointments and just not even show up. Rockefeller just simply was not an administrator. But his administration generally, I think, was extremely healthy. He brought in good people, securities, insurance, commissioner positions, State Department, and State Departments supplemented their salary, backed them up. And because of that, there was a lot of progress during that period. And the extent to which he was responsible for bringing them in, he's responsible for the progress that was made. But as far as he personally, I just don't think he was that good an administrator. And so in 1970, when he lost to Bumpers, I think it was really a combination of things. Number one was simply the fact that the Democrats had nominated somebody that was acceptable to Democrats. And that was probably sufficient in and of itself. Second was that Rockefeller said he only wanted two terms. Said he would only seek two terms and then step down. So he wound up with a credibility problem or something. Third was the general perception that he really was not that good an administrator, that he was not that effective in getting things done. And fourth were personal habits, which had been rumor for a good while, but by 1970 were most people had seen or heard of some incidents which documented for them that, yes, he does have a drinking problem, and it's not just a rumor that the Democrats are spreading. Because there were stories all over the state of Arkansas about his drinking problem. Going to make a speech somewhere and having to be helped off the plane, and that sort of thing.
And he developed a fairly acute case of alcoholism by that time.
Yeah, he was, his work habits contributed to it, because the fact that he stayed out of the office so much, it constantly led to speculation, and a good bit of the time when he showed up in public, he had been drinking. Now, the thing is that I never accepted the idea that he was. People would watch him in a speech or press conference or any kind of public situation, and they'd come out of there just convinced the man was drunk. I don't think that was always true, because it was usually based on two things. One, that he was sweating profusely, but I think that was just that was Rockefeller. And the other, that he was nervous as he could be. That, again, was just Rockefeller. I think you put him in a public speaking situation or a press conference, and he would sweat profusely, and his hands would shake if he'd been on the wagon for a week. He was just an extremely nervous person and never did adapt to public requirements, public speaking type situation. He was very nervous. But I'll tell you about a personal situation. The man had a fantastic capacity. I went on a trip with him once out of state. I had asked, because he kept making such a big thing about the fact that he was, his great contribution was his name and his reputation and the doors that had opened, and so he spent a lot of time on the road, supposedly promoting Arkansas and industrial growth and that sort of thing. So because he'd made a big point of it, I asked to go along with him and went along on a trip to Ohio, Columbus, and Cleveland. The man had, we were supposed to leave about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. We finally got away about an hour and 15 minutes or so late because there were more problems at the prison that day. He drank all the way to Columbus on the plane. Apparently been drinking a goodly bit during the day. Totally emasculated, a beautiful speech. It was a formal lecture series which had had some rather big names before him. I think George Bundy had been there earlier in the year, maybe McNamara, I can't remember, but fairly prestigious lecture series at, what is it, Ohio U at Columbus. But he had a beautiful speech that had been written by Charlie Albright, one of his speech writers. I was trying to follow him, and I don't think there was one complete sentence delivered as written. You just kind of follow, and then you'd pop in a phrase out of the text, and then he'd wander off again, and then you'd find him another paragraph further down and pulling out another phrase. That was the one where he delivered the famous remark about the freedoms that many of us in this room have lived and died for, which cracked everybody up during the course of it. We left there, we spent the night there. He got up the next morning, we flew to Cleveland. He had a Bloody Mary on the plane, a round of engagements, TV, radio, spoke to the Rotary Club that day. The Rotary Club, to give you an idea of the Rockefeller, you know, here's Rotary Club, you're hitting the top. That's generally is the top, upper crust of the business establishment in any community. Big, huge room and all the gathering. At one point during that thing, he's talking about Arkansas and how proud he was and everything. He always wore these big boots, pulled his foot up, stuck it up on the right next to the speaker's lectern to show them his boots, the fact that he wore them even in Cleveland. Real style. He was back in the room periodically drinking all during the day. I don't know how much that man put away during the course of that day. Had a reception that night for industrialists, drinking all during that. Finally, towards the end of that thing, everybody had left except one industrialist. Rockefeller sat down for the first time to relax, and boy, when he sat down, apparently it hit him. But he had gone all the way up through that day without any noticeable effects and the fact that he'd been drinking steadily. I have no idea how many he'd put away.
Did he drink vodka, mostly?
Mostly.
Well, what was his effect with the industrial?
That's where it got embarrassing. He sat down next to the industrialist and began, first he was, started patting him on the leg, and then that went on longer than it was necessary to make his point. Then he began talking about hands and began comparing hands and holding the guy's hand and holding next to him, comparing sizes, and it really got embarrassing after a while, and they started trying to get him out. And at that point, he was just stoned. So we went back upstairs. They mixed him another drink. He promptly dropped it. Went downstairs. He went over to the cabbie and put his arm around him, explained to him he wanted a cab. We got in the car, went out to the airport. His bodyguard was in the front seat. I was in the middle of the back seat. Rockefeller on one side, Bill Connolly as press man on the other. We got out there, and all the way out to the airport, he kept wanting to shake hands with me and explain that he was so pleased that I'd come along, that he could could see what it was really like being the governor of Arkansas and all the responsibilities he had. We must have shaked hands 10 times between there and the airport. We got out there and drove right out by the plane. The bodyguard got out. Conley, the press man, got out. They paid the cabbie. I was trying to get out, but he kept wanting to shake hands. And finally, the cabbie turned around and said, "Hey, buddy, they're going to go off and leave you," which is the wrong thing to say, because Rockefeller looked at him and said, "Buddy, I own that goddamn plane." Finally, he quit. He let go, and I jumped out. They helped him out. He took aim for the plane and promptly walked into the jet. And it really got embarrassing. I went on and got on the plane, and they finally steered him in, mixed him another drink. He promptly dropped it in the aisle and zonked out.
How about on the other industrialists, you know, during the day? Was he selling? Obviously, the last one was a disaster, but all during the day.
Well, fortunately, that guy was already had a couple of plants in Arkansas. I don't know. He was able to get their attention, which is probably 90% of it, if you can just get in the door, which Rockefeller certainly could. It was a heck of a good turnout for the reception that night. And we were getting publicity, the whole time, all day long. He was on a TV interview show, two radio shows.
Did you get any perception or feels of whether or not, at the end of the day, some of these guys are thinking, "Well, I want to put a plant in Arkansas, but I really don't want to put a plant in Arkansas"? I mean, the popular story, at least, is that once Rockefeller came in and went to these industrialists and sold them on locating plants in Arkansas, it was a great success. Of course, elsewhere in the South, he also had the whole South industrializing.
I doubt that it worked that way. I think what Rockefeller was able to do was to get their attention, to get in the door, and to establish communications. His AIDC, Arkansas Industrial Development Commission, people were always along. And it was, they were the ones who were doing the selling as far as any specifics.
But in opening the door, he was effective.
Extremely.
And it did have some.
I can't imagine many people from Arkansas or most places in the South going up and having a reception for industrialists in Cleveland and drawing 20, 30, 40 people.
Well, Dale, had it not been for his wealth, he would not have been able to run that 66 campaign the way that thing was run. Right. He would not have been able to attract the kind of attention that you say you got when you left the state. He would not have been able to attract a lot of people here and supplement their salaries in the state jobs. So what factor did the wealth alone play in that? Wealth and name.
If he'd been Winthrop Smith, he'd been just another name that we can't even remember their first name.
Wouldn't the same thing be true of the building of the Republican Party as well?
Well, the thing is, the Republican Party during the period of Rockefeller was an aberration anyway. There was no future to it. He didn't build a Republican Party and couldn't if he'd wanted to.
Well, I mean, he put money into it.
He put an awful lot of money into it.
Did he want to build one?
I think he wanted to, in an abstract sort of way. What he did was not really designed to build a long-range party. But the biggest problem he had was simply from an ideological point of view. There is no future to a Republican Party as the liberal party in a state. And they were just totally out of step. The traditional Republicans were going along because it was a chance. But for that 4 years, Winthrop Rockefeller was the liberal. The Republican parties was the liberal party in the state. And
how about the handful of Republicans in the legislature during his period?
It's less than a handful. They managed to get up to four at one point. I think one in the Senate, three in the House, and that was the high point.
Were they moderate to liberals, or were they conservatives, or what?
Generally moderate. You can't tell any, well, give you an example. Thing is, during this term, we've had one Republican in the House, one in the Senate. Caldwell, the state senator, chairman of the party. I made a study last year of legislators' support or opposition to Bumper's legislative program. And the Republicans ranked in the top third, probably, at least certainly the top half, in terms of support of the governor. I went back and checked bills that they had introduced. The only things in the world that they introduced that could be identified as Republican was that one of them introduced a resolution memorializing Winthrop Rockefeller, and the other one introduced a resolution commending Nixon for ending the war. Other than that, there was absolutely nothing concerning their record to set them apart as Republicans. There's no Republican program. They don't stand for anything except they're out and they want in, and they stand for a two-party system.
Did Rockefeller do anything to try and recruit candidates for the legislature, this sort of thing?
Yeah.
Was he successful?
They were running more candidates during, particularly 68, which is probably the... They ran a full slate for all seven state constitutional officers, 68, plus they had a Republican running for the United States Senate who was conservative and Rockefeller didn't get along with him, and he accuses John Ward of having beaten him. It's Charles Bernard, who ran against Fulbright. I've forgotten, I think they had 35 or 40 candidates for the legislature in 68.
That was their high water mark then, right? And how many did they elect? Not very many.
Four.
Now, the impression I have is that the Republican Party in Arkansas is weaker than any other southern state, and the prospects of it getting much stronger aren't very good because the state doesn't have that much urban population. It apparently doesn't really have that tradition of mountain republicanism that you find in most of the other upper south states.
Well, that's where the few that they do have are there.
Yeah.
But it's weak.
Nothing
like East Tennessee, though, or Western North Carolina, Western Virginia.
Well, for example, last fall, or in 72, the thing we did in here in terms of taking all the statewide races, even with Nixon just carrying the state, every county by huge margins, there were only two counties in the state that wound up going Republican when you considered all the state races. And they had a number of candidates, and generally attractive, presentable candidates.
Were those small counties or large counties?
Both. Their best strength is in the smaller, very rural counties.
The traditional mountain Republican counties.
How do you explain that, the inability, even after having a Republican governor for two terms, to build strength in the legislature or even in local offices?
Well, the thing was, Rockefeller was building his strength based on moderates. Those people became Democrats for Rockefeller, but that's all. And any idea they had that they could ever make Republicans out of those people just was unrealistic. All it took was the Democrats coming back and nominating a moderate like Dale Bumpers in 1970, and the Democrats for Rockefeller organization was just wiped out.
If Rockefeller had run as a Democrat, say in 66 or 64, would he have beaten Fulbright?
I don't know.
You
would have started out with a better chance.
Are you saying that because the Republican Party was seen as the liberal choice between the two parties, it didn't have any future at all? And that's what killed it off?
I think so.
But had it been a conservative party like the other Republican parties in the South, it might have had a chance?
Well, the thing... Looking at the other southern state that I'm most familiar with in terms of the two-party, Tennessee, where there has effectively been a party realignment in Tennessee. But it was there were a number of circumstances that the Democrats played into their hands. The Republicans were running as conservatives. The Democrats were continuing to nominate John J. Hooker and Albert Gore, etc., with a liberal image. And they have just effectively brought about a party realignment in Tennessee. There's no way Rockefeller could have gone to the right of Jim Johnson. But as a moderate Democrat, he very well may have pulled it off there. He may have done it even against Faubus in 64 as a moderate Democrat. But I don't think there's any future to the Republicans trying to be the liberal party in this state. One of the guys who was in our program this past year, Dan Durning, wrote a piece for a newspaper, the Arkansas Advocate, pushing this whole point of view that the Republican Party should go back to the party of Rockefeller and become the moderate to liberal party and nominate somebody like Sterling Cockrell and everything. But it's there's just no future to it. It's out of step. That whole theory is based on Democrats for Rockefeller, and those are people who would never support Richard Nixon or Barry Goldwater or Ronald Reagan or whoever the Republicans are likely to nominate. They're just out of step with the National Party. And would never be at home. They might move to a point of independence, but they'd never become Republicans, and that's what that whole theory is based on. Taking the Democrats for Rockefeller organization and making Republicans out of it. It won't work.
Was the reason it wouldn't work because the Republican Party nationally had moved too far to the right? I mean, is that what...
They would never accept the National Republican image, general positions.
But if the Republicans had nominated